As we've taken a look at the wisdom literature of the Old Testament, we've gone through a general survey of what it means to have wisdom literature, wisdom with God and wisdom in living for God. We've looked at the book of Job, we've looked at the book of Psalms, we've looked at the book of Proverbs. Now we're going to focus our attention on a shorter book, but one with a huge impact, the book of Ecclesiastes. The book of Ecclesiastes might be considered to be a college or university course in the meaning of life. It's truly one of the most profound books in the entire Bible. Now, it doesn't focus so much on theology in the ways that we often think of theology, that is, who is God and how should we go about our lives day to day. It focuses more on the meaning of life itself. The name Ecclesiastes comes from the Greek translations of the book, and those were some of the most prominent at the time of Jesus, since the Septuagint, the translation of the Old Testament Hebrew into Greek, was the dominant expression of the scriptures at the time of Jesus. And the teacher in the Greek version of the book is the Ecclesiastes, the person, the teacher or preacher who shows up early in the book. In Hebrew, that person is called Koheleth. And so you'll see both of these names given to the book and to its primary addressee or addresser. The one who speaks in the book is Koheleth in Hebrew or Ecclesiastes in the Greek language. And we take it across into our English translations as the book of Ecclesiastes. The term Koheleth means convener of an assembly for instruction. In other words, a teacher, someone who's a philosopher or teacher who gathers others around her or himself in order to speak to them with wisdom about the experiences of life and the meaning of life. And similarly, Ecclesiastes, the term means the same thing, teacher or preacher. And so you'll see sometimes the word translated as teacher and sometimes preacher. Both are fitting terms as we think about the Ecclesiastes. Who was the author? Likely Solomon, because of the references, particularly in chapter 1, verses 1, and chapter 1, verse 12, and chapter 1, verse 16, and then again the reference to him in chapter 12 at the end of the book. The references to the teacher in Jerusalem, the king, the leader, Solomon comes in. If Solomon wrote them, and I think he did, then probably somewhere around 950 BC, somewhere near the end of his life, I would think. It looks like an old man looking back on his life. It may be that the ideas were scribbled down and that the collection as a whole came together later. If that's the case, then probably during the time or after the time of the exile. But I'm quite certain that this reflects Solomon near the end of his life, thinking about the things that he's gone through and trying to make sense of life in terms of his understanding of God, his understanding of the way that life is shaped, the meaning of the Creator, and how we are to live in a world which is often compromised, convoluted, and in which God is not always immediately apparent to us. The reason for its inclusion in the Bible is likely that link, that direct link to Solomon and the wisdom of Solomon, and so it falls nicely into the wisdom literature of the Old Testament. The big theme of it is that everything is meaningless, and that theme is stated several times. Right up front, all is meaningless, or all is vanity, vanity of vanities in some translations, meaningless, all is meaningless, and again, near the end in chapter 12, verse 8. The idea behind that meaninglessness is this, that if this world is a closed system in which all is reduced to fate and happenstance, then everything is indeed tragedy and meaninglessness simply because there's no purpose to it all. We happen to be here, not of our own volition. There's no outside purpose to that. We live for a while, and a lot of what happens to us while we live is pretty nonsensical, and then we die, and so what? And then it just goes on. Everything is meaningless. However, a larger theme begins to emerge. If there is a God, then life is brief, but it has meaning. And if we believe that, then the instructions that we'll find near the end are to live boldly, to live joyfully and to live godly, since even if we can't see God eyeball to eyeball, it makes sense to live in ways in which God, who brings meaning to life, intended for us to live. There are a number of different kinds of literature within the collection. There are personal reflections like the king on his throne in chapter 2. There are rhetorical questions, isn't this what happens, or wouldn't you like to see this, or don't you know this? There are proverbs, lots of proverbs, very similar proverbs to those we have in the book of Proverbs. And if this is indeed from the mind and voice and pen of Solomon, that stands to reason, because Solomon speaks in Proverbs and communicates wisdom in Proverbs. So much of Ecclesiastes is formed in proverbial language. And there's even the allegory near the end about how one grows older in comparison to how a house deteriorates. So it's a very interesting thing. It's important for us to be reminded again of what are the options when thinking about the meaning of life. And there really are three dominant worldview options. There is the possibility that the world in which we live, the universe in which we live, is a closed system. There's no external information or forces, no God or gods. All of human life is accidental and holds no more meaning than any other object. And in that sense, even the Bible, although it may seem to be wise, is merely attempting to make sense out of nonsense. And the Bible is no more significant than any other book that's ever been written, and somebody holds up an idea and says, see, I've got the meaning to life, and we all thumb our noses and say, yeah, right, people have tried that before. So too with the Bible. Or, secondly, there's the possibility that the world itself exists as a manifestation of intelligence or God or godness or being, that somehow life and time are the creative edge that shape our existence in a closed system, and that human life is meaningful insofar as we go with the flow, as we live with the values that structure the system, values larger than ourselves, but still there's no ultimate meaning to our individual lives. There's ultimate meaning to ultimate being. And the Bible is somehow a record and reflection of those who have come to that understanding and can help us fall in line with that rather than kicking against the system to our own detriment. Or, thirdly, here's a worldview possibility as well, and this becomes important for the book of Ecclesiastes. The other two worldview systems only bring us frustration and consternation because they lead to no ultimate value for us. However, the book of Ecclesiastes says maybe there's a third option. Maybe there's a God. Maybe there's a God who's the creator of the world in which we live, and it's not a closed system, but dynamically interacting with its creator. That existence is planned and intended by God. That human life is honored and compromised, sure, but redeemable. That the Bible then becomes part of the larger dialogue between God and us, in which we are called back to our truest selves through the redemption that God provides. That is what the book of Ecclesiastes is about. Because it probes those other worldviews and then begins to focus on, is there an alternative to worldviews which only bring that kind of frustration and meaninglessness? So the outline of the big book of Ecclesiastes is roughly this. There's a prologue in which all of life is declared to be meaningless and an explanation of how that is achieved, that perception, that perspective. An old man who looks back on his life and the lives of others and says, taken by themselves, everything is meaningless. And then a list of things that make life meaningful. Even wisdom within that context or framework or that outlook is meaningless. Pleasures are meaningless, folly is meaningless, toil is meaningless. No matter what you do, an end comes to it, and what have you gained? Even if you work hard, you die, and it's left to someone else. There's an interlude on the bondage of time, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to pluck up what is planted, a time to reap, a time to sow. You know the bondage of time in chapter 3. And here there's a kind of switch back and forth in outlook. Are we looking at something that oppresses us or something that marches us on to something bigger and larger. And we'll see that the latter is the intention of the writer of Ecclesiastes, a call to something bigger and more important. Return to that theme, other meaningless things, oppression, toil, friendlessness, political advancement. So you win the election, then what? People accuse you of various things and you find that your term of office ends up not accomplishing what you wanted to. Unfulfilled vows to God. So you want to be religious and you try to do the right and then you realize that you haven't done the right and everything falls apart. Amassing wealth and it goes nowhere because you die and you can't take it with you. So in order in these meaningless reflections on the meaningless things of life, perhaps to stay sane, we need to get some practical wisdom. And there come the many proverbs. How are we going to get practical wisdom? By going with wisdom rather than folly, the proverbs. And then come the concluding reflections of the teacher to all of these things. The meaning of life must be found beyond life. And what is beyond life? If there is a God, it's found in God alone. All of life is progressing toward a common end, so enjoy life while you have it and be wise. And the summary themes are to live boldly, live joyfully, and live godly. Cast your bread upon the water. You don't know where the water will take it. Observe your Creator or live for your Creator in the days of your youth. All of that is restated again in the epilogue where that theme of meaninglessness now is now tempered and put into a context of a larger understanding of what meaning can be, plus some final reminders about all of these things. We'll look in more detail at some of those things next time, but for now you might want to refer to my book, Covenant Documents, to get that overview of what the book of Ecclesiastes is all about.